I'm warning everyone that today's daf in Rosh Hashanah's daf yud test. When yud ches amud beis. Okay, started the new Mishnah on the bottom of yud ches amud aleph, and with this new Mishnah, we really started a new section of the Masechta, the first 18 blot of the Gemara, right until the halfway point of yud ches amud aleph, dealt primarily with this idea that Rosh Hashanah is the beginning. And there isn't just one Rosh Hashanah, but over the course of the year, there are four Rosh Hashanahs. And we dealt with a lot in the last recent, in the more recent days, about judgment and the judgment of Rosh Hashanah. And could be that there are judgments other times of the year as well. That's the that's what we saw in the Mishnah back on Tet Zayin. But in the meantime, however, now we move into a new discussion in the Masechta, and that's Rosh Chodesh. So we know that Rosh Chodesh was sanctified by Beis Din. And the sanctification of Rosh Chodesh comes through a process, and the process we're going to be discussing at length over the course of the next week and a half of the Masechta. We are focusing right now on the Mishnah, Yud Ches Amud Aleph, on post-sanctification, meaning Beis Din was Mekadesh HaChodesh. Beis Din sanctified the new month. And as we explained yesterday, there are two candidates in terms of when Beis Din can be Mekadesh HaChodesh. Either they can be Mekadesh the 30th day of the month, which means that the 30th becomes day 1, or they can be Mekadesh day 31, which means day 31 will turn into day 1. Okay, there are two possible candidates in terms of which day will be Mekudash, and as a result of that, Beis Din will sanctify the day. We'll talk more about that over the course of the next week. And then afterwards, broadcast the information. The broadcasting of this information was done in the most old-fashioned way imaginable, and that is on foot. People would be sent out, shlichim would be sent out over the as wide as the net as they possibly can go, to the largest area of the largest radius that could possibly spread out to tell the people. Now, do the people need to know every month when Rosh Chodesh was? The answer to that is no. They don't need to know every month. Most of the months, well, not most, half of the months they don't need to know. But half of the months they do need to know. And the Mishnah told us which months they need to know. So they need to know any month that has a Yontif in it, basically. A Yontif or a Tanis. So if there's a Yontif, there's a Tanis. So then they need to go out. And when there was the Beis HaMikdash, you can tack on to that also the month of Iyar. People need to know when the month of Rosh Chodesh for Iyar was, so that in the event that they didn't bring Pesach Rishon, so they're going to come and bring Pesach Sheni on the 14th day of Iyar. So 6 of the 12 months, Beis Din would send out Shlichim, and the Shlichim would let people know, would notify people when exactly Rosh Chodesh was. Good? So that's what we saw. That's what we saw yesterday. That's what we discussed yesterday. Our discussion yesterday revolved around the notable omissions of the Mishnah. What was left out of the Mishnah? So we noted that Tammuz and Teves was left out of the Mishnah. And that's problematic because there are fast days in Tammuz and there's fast days in Teves. In Tammuz we have the 17th day of Tammuz, and Teves we have the 10th day of Teves. So how come the Shlichim don't go out at that point in time? So this is the question we asked yesterday. We gave an answer. I'll just quickly review the answer and we'll pick it up right where we left off. So the answer to that was that on the 17th day of Tammuz and the 10th day of Teves, so those are fast days instituted by the Nevi'im, which we'll explore in just a moment with more detail. But those were fast days that were not absolute obligations. Not like Tisha B'Av, which is an absolute obligation. And the third day of Tishrei, well, they're going out anyway, but for Tishrei. But they were not absolute obligations to fast. The Gemara quotes Rav Papa says that some communities took on the fast, some communities didn't take on this practice of fasting, and that was and so therefore they weren't absolute obligations. That's why the Shlichim weren't sent out neither in the month of Tammuz nor in the month of Teves. Okay, as I pointed out yesterday, take a look at the Shulchan Aruch. The discussion already started with the Rishonim, where obviously it's our practice that we do fast on these days, on the 17th of Tammuz and on the 10th day of Teves. Okay, this is where we left off yesterday. And Tisha B'Av, the Gemara says, well, Tisha B'Av is exceptional, meaning that even when the 17th day of Tammuz and the 10th day of Teves were optional, but Tisha B'Av, for sure, everyone fasted after the destruction of the Second Temple. Why was that the case? And the Gemara to that said that Tisha B'Av, huch b'lo bo saros. We have compounded so many different tragedies that took place on Tisha B'Av, so therefore there was a mandate, an obligation, an absolute obligation to fast on Tisha B'Av, so the Shlichim would go out for the month of Av. Okay. Ad Khan, that takes us to where we left off yesterday. We are now on Yud Ches Amud Beis. We're towards the top of the Amud, and we're now beginning with Tanya. Okay, there are four fasts over the course of the year that we fast because of the Chorban Beis HaMikdash. Destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. We are going to primarily focus on the second Beis HaMikdash. Although, as we just learned yesterday's daf, the end of yesterday's daf, first Beis HaMikdash 2 was destroyed on the ninth day of Av. But we're really, in the psukim that we're quoting, that we're going to quote in just a moment, is really talking about the first Beis HaMikdash. But from our perspective, we focus on the second Beis HaMikdash, and you'll see why I say that momentarily. Anyway, there are four fasts that are done over the course of the year. Now, these four fasts that we do over the course of the year are actually mentioned in the Navi. Meaning, you open up a Sefer Zechariah, we're going to quote the Psukim in a moment, and the Psukim in Zechariah indicate, and we're going to have other Psukim as well in Yirmiyahu, that there were four specific events leading up to the destruction of the first temple, and also second temple as well, but again, the Pesukim only talking about the first temple, and because of these four events, so therefore there were four fasts that were instituted. Okay, let's see inside. By going through the Gemara, we're going to end up going through it anyway. So let's see the Gemara inside. Tanya, I'm Rabbi Shimon. Arba dvarim hayu Rabbi Kiva darish va'ani in darish kamoso. Rabbi Shimon says that on four things Rabbi Kiva expounded, and I don't agree with him. Okay. Yes. It's strange. Admittedly, where Rabbi Shimon over here probably is a reference to the Rashbi, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, student of Rabbi Akiva. How could he disagree with his Rabbi? Okay. Well, one of those questions that keeps recurring again and again, and you know, I don't have the best answers. So. Yeah. Well, he had other Rebbeim as well. Meaning, okay. Either way, so it's somewhere Revi. So we are going to identify. Now, remember the Pesukim that we quoted yesterday in Zechariah? The Pesukim talked about the four fasts. The Pesukim in Zechariah do not mention the date. The only thing the Pesukim in Zechariah mentioned is the month, and it just identifies the month by a number, which, as we know, is par for the course, meaning that the names of the months did not come until later, historically, right? We talked about this often. Purim, Persia, the names that we have for the months are Persian names. But so therefore, the Navi only identifies the months by the number. So if you look back, look at the top of the Amud. Kamar Hashem Tzvakos, Som HaRevi'i, Som HaChamishi, Som HaShvi'i, Som HaAsiri. So the fasts occur in the 4th, 5th, 7th, and 10th month. That's what the Pasuk in Zechariah says. Now the only question is, what fast are we talking about? So the Gemara quotes, so this is Rabbi Shimon now first quoting Rabbi Akiva. So it's somewhere Revi Ezu Taim Tes B'Tamas. So the fast that occurs in the 4th month, remember, month number 1 is Nisan. As much as we got confused earlier in the Masechta, let's not be confused. Numbers of the month are not even up for discussion. Month number 1 is Nisan, and then you just simply plod along from that point going forward. So if Nisan is month number 1, so the 4th month is Tamas. So 4th month is Tammuz. That's speaking specifically about the ninth day of Tammuz. Shebo Hufka Ha'ir. Because on the ninth day of Tammuz, that's when the city was breached. Shenamar. Gemara quotes a pasuk in Yirmiyahu describing, B'tisha L'chodesh, V'yachazek HaRav B'ir, V'lo Ha'ya La'am Ha'aretz, V'tiva Ka Ha'ir. That the wall was breached. Now, as I pointed out, here's a good place now to mention. So we don't observe the ninth day of Tammuz, we observe the 17th day of Tammuz. Correct. Tosfos points out that's because in this date, there's a discrepancy between temple number 1 and temple number 2. Temple number 1, the wall was breached on the ninth day of Tammuz, and temple number 2, the wall was breached on the 17th day of Tammuz. So our commemoration of this day follows temple 2, not temple number 1. Okay, but either way, the Pasuk in Zechariah, when describing month number 4, is talking about the wall being breached. And the 4th month means it's the 4th month. Now in the 5th month, that's Tisha B'Av. That's the day where the Beis HaMikdash was actually destroyed. Okay, and it's called Chamishi because it's a reference to the 5th month. On the 7th month, we know the 7th month is Tishrei, and we're speaking specifically about the 3rd day of Tishrei, Shabo Nera Gedaliah ben Achikam. Gedaliah ben Achikam was who was the last standing ruler during Bais Rishon, so he was killed on the 3rd day of Tishrei, really signifying the end of the era of Bais Rishon, so we commemorate that as well. Umi Hargo, Yishmael ben Nisanya Hargo. And then the Brisa points out that Yishmael killed him. Interesting, I mean, we know that from the Pesukim, why the Brisa adds that point, I don't know, but anyway, lamdecha sheshkula misasan shal tzedikim kesreifas beis elokeinim, and the death of a tzaddik is devastating to us as the destruction of the beis hamikdash. V'amai karele shvi shvi lechadashim, and why is it called shvi? It's called shvi because it's the seventh month. Tzom ha'asiri, and now we move on. We're now in the tenth month. Tenth month is Teves. Zu asara b'Teves, and that's a reference to the tenth day of Teves. Shabo samach melech bavel al Yerushalayim. Where there, the Melech Bavel, the Babylonian king, okay, we can identify him in Nebuchadnezzar. So he surrounded the first Beis HaMikdash. Right, that's when he started laying siege on the first temple, which was the 10th day of Teves. Shenemar v'yidvar Hashem alai b'shana ha-chiz, b'chodesh ha-siri, ninth year, 10th month, b'estur l'chodesh, 10th day of the month, le'mor ben adam k'sav l'cha ishem hayom es etzam hayom azet, samach melech bavel al Yerushalayim. It's on that day where Nebuchadnezzar started encircling and laying siege to the city of Yerushalayim. V'amaykar le'asiri, asiri le'chadashim. And it's called 10th because it's the 10th month. Period. Okay, so this is all how Rabbi Kiva understands the Pasuk in Zechariah. So basically, each month that's mentioned in Zechariah is a reference to the month as it falls out in the year. Meaning, four is the fourth month, five is the fifth month, seven and ten, or month seven and ten. So far, so good. The only problem with this understanding of the Pasuk in Zechariah is that it's not chronological. It doesn't follow the chronology of how things occurred. Meaning, if we were to think historically, what's the first event that happened? Obviously, the first event that happened is the Asara B'Teves. So it's a little bit odd that, yes, we are plotting the dates on the calendar from month 4 to 5 to 7 to 10, but it is a little bit strange that the tenth month, which is Teves, really commemorates the first event that befell the Jewish people in the destruction of the first temple.
Illustrating the month.
Okay, so right. In other words, right. So in other words, instead of plotting chronologically, it's plotting by the months. So this is Rabbi Shimon saying, this is where I depart from my Rebbe. This is where I don't agree with Rabbi Akiva. V'alo ha'yoraizel lechtav rishon v'lama nechtav kan kedei lahasdir chadash ketiknan. Okay, and Rabbi Akiva says, I understand it's a little bit strange, but the Navi Zechariah wants to tell us the fast as it goes along the months. Even though chronologically, the last fast really is the first thing that happened chronologically.
What is the dispute?
Well, hold on a second. Well, let's first see Rabbi Shimon. V'ani eni omer kein. And Rabbi Shimon says, now I don't agree. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to identify the four fasts, as mentioned in Zechariah. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to suggest that they are speaking not only in the order of the months, but chronologically, in the order of how they occurred. And this is how it's going to work. That the 10th month is reflective of not the 10th day of the month, meaning that according to Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, there is no fast commemorating the beginning of the siege against Yerushalayim. Interesting. But rather, it's because of what occurred in the 10th month on the 5th day of the month. What occurred on that day? Betevis Shebo Bashmo Lagola Shehukata Ha'ir. Because it was on the 5th day of the month where word got out to the diaspora that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. Just if we can for a moment think, talk about news traveling slow. Meaning the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed on Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av was the 4th month of the year. Now according to Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, what is now happening is that the news gets to Bavel, the 4th month, all the way to the... I'm sorry, the 5th month, excellent correction. The 5th month of the year, all the way to the 10th month. It took 5 months for news to travel from Yerushalayim to Bavel that the temple was destroyed. So, you're talking about...
Which one? This is the first one?
This is all the first. Meaning, when we're discussing the Pesukim, it's all basically Mikdash number one.
Weren't they exiled at the time? All of them at the same time?
It's hard to understand.
Who's taking news to where?
Presumably, I don't know. I'm making the observation. I mean, I understand it's difficult to imagine that it took 5 months for the news to travel. I'm making the observation. I don't know, but
it's not the 5 months. But who was in Bavel?
Yeah. Oh no, there was a community. No, there was a community in Bavel forever.
Before the Betamikdash?
During
the Betamikdash?
Yeah. I don't know when it started. In other words, during the entirety of Bais Sheni, during the entire Second Temple, there was a community out in Bavel.
Right, because they were exiled.
Correct, correct, correct. But who's there? Okay. Well, you also understand, right, this we know. Meaning, before the instruction of the Bais Rishon, so the Jews were sent out in stages. Meaning, for at least 10 years. More. Right, right. They were already being exiled out of Yehoyakim, Yechanya. So they were exiled before the actual destruction. So, okay.
These are the 10 tribes you're talking about.
No. That's over 100 years before the destruction of the first. Right, okay. All right, look, it is strange. But, and the Gemara quotes a pasuk, there's another pasuk in Yechezkel, Shenemar, Vayhi b'shtei asrei shana, in the 12th year, b'asiri b'chamish l'chosh, on the 50th of the month, l'galusin ba'elai ha'palit mi'Yerushalayim. So the refugee comes from Jerusalem, le'mor hukata ha'ir. The city was destroyed. V'asu yom ha'shmua ki yom sreifa. And the yom shmua is ki yom sreifa. In Avelos, right? Just to give us a better idea of what this means, right? If a person loses one of the seven relatives, so he's an Avel. This is true if he's there for the death, and it would also be true if he hears about it at a later point in time. This is what's called a Shmua, meaning again, it's in our world of communication, it's impossible to imagine, but a person loses a relative, doesn't find out about it until a year later. 2 years later, so on the day that he hears about it, he's an avel. Okay, it's a truncated avelus. It's not the 7 days of avelus. It's only one day. When we get to Moed Katan, we'll discuss this in length. But in the meantime, however, so basically, the Gemara says that the day that they learn about the destruction of the first temple, this is Yom HaShmua, and the Yom HaShmua is like the Yom HaSreifa, and therefore the fifth day of Tevis was instituted as a fast day. Now you understand, according to Shimon Bar Yochai, we have an advantage. Because now the Pasuk in Zechariah that lists the four fast days are actually working chronologically. Where the first fast day is, don't get confused, the ninth day of Tammuz. Again, we're talking about the first temple. The ninth day of Tammuz, that's fast number one, which is the breach of the wall. Then the ninth day of Av, a month later, that's the destruction of the first temple. Then it's the killing of Gedaliah ben Achikam. That's in the month of, that's in the seventh month in Tishrei, third day of Tishrei. And then there was finally when the people out in Bavel learned about it, which was the 10th month, which is Tevis.
It's chronological. I mean, that's still going with the calendar.
It's going with the calendar and it's also going with chronology.
Right.
You got both. Venir and Devarai midvarav. Sha'ani omer al rishon rishon v'achron achron. And Rosh Hashanah Yochai says, look, and it's a debate, but I just, my position speaks more to me, because I'm following the chronology. And according to my Rebbe, Rebbe Akiva, so the last event mentioned in Zechariah, the 10th month, is really the first thing that happened. And again, it's just strange. And I know what he's doing, he's just following the months, but I'm actually following the chronology. Period, ad kan. That takes us to the end of the Brisa. And so what we gain from this Brisa is this idea that that there is a fast day in Tammuz and in Teves. And now we can honestly say there are two dates in both. Meaning in Tammuz, there's a 9th and there's a 17th. 9th for the first base of Mikdash, that's when the wall was breached for the first temple. And the 17th for the second base of Mikdash. And, again, as I pointed out, we obviously observe the 17th because we are in mourning over the second temple. Okay.
Yerushalmi challenges the ninth instead of that they actually
correct. When we get
correct or like not correct.
Well, we're gonna talk more about that. That's coming up. And then in the 10th month, meaning in Teves, there's another fast day. So when is that fast day? That's also subject to a machlokus. So it's either going to be the 5th of the month or the 10th of the month. If it's the 10th of the month, it commemorates the beginning of the siege Nebuchadnezzar laid around the first temple. Or if it's the 5th of the month, it's a commemoration of when the Jews out in Bavel learned about the destruction of the first temple. Either way, what comes out from all this is that there are four fast days that are commemorating the destruction of the temple, and this pasuk in Zechariah is telling us that the this pasuk in Zechariah is telling us that that during the that after the destruction, they're all to be observed. And going back to yesterday's point, just wrapping it all up, Rav Papa says that after the destruction, not every community fasted on three of the four. meaning on Gimel Tishrei, on Yudzayin Tammuz, on the 10th of Teves, not all communities fasted. It wasn't an absolute requirement. It was some did and some didn't. Okay, nowadays, obviously we fast on all of them, but that brings us around to why we got into this brisa. Okay, we're towards the Bam Yudches Amud Aleph, and now we begin a discussion of Megillas Tanis. Let's go with a little bit of an introduction. Okay, Megillas Tanis, first of all, what is it? Okay, Megillas Tanis is a scroll, as the name indicates, but not like Megillas Esther, not like Megillas Rus. Megillas Esther, Megillas Rus, those are part of Tanakh. Those are canonized, part of the 24 books of Tanakh, and that's Kitzvei Kodesh, meaning that has the status of Tanakh. When we're talking about Megillas Tanis, it's a scroll, but it's a scroll in the sense of it was traditions that were passed down for generations that were written down in one document. Therefore, it's called Megillas Tanis. What was this document contained? In this document, it had all the dates which were miraculous days in which we, the Jewish people, were saved, and historical record of salvation that we had from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the date in which it occurred, and therefore they're like mini celebrations. Even without opening up a Megillas Tanis, so you and I can already identify two days or two events that are mentioned in Megillas Tanis. One would be Hanukkah, and the other would be Purim. Both of those events are mentioned in Megillas Tanis, and again, we know that the 25th day of Kislev, right, a day of salvation for the Jewish people. I'm sure you're all familiar with the story. And 8 days and the lights lit, and right, we all understand. Okay, that event of Hanukkah was mentioned in Megillas Tanis, as was many other events. Do we have Megillas Tanis nowadays? Yes, we do. We have Megillas Tanis is still in existence. It's not part of a Gemara. It's not part of the Daf Yomi cycle. We don't learn it together, but it's there. It's not easy reading. Megillas Tanis is written in Aramaic. So I know. So is the Gemara, but Gemara's Aramaic is easy Aramaic. I know not everyone agrees with that, but it is. It's the you don't need to know a lot of Aramaic to learn Gemara, but the Megillas Tanis is written in absolute Aramaic, and you want to read it, and it's hard. It's like reading Sefer Daniel. Okay, it's not easy. In the meantime, however, what about these days that are mentioned in Megillas Tanis? So because every one of the dates that are mentioned represent a miracle that occurred, so you're not allowed to fast on that day. Meaning sometimes fasts were instituted. You cannot institute a fast on any day that's mentioned in Megillas Tanis. Some of those days mentioned in Megillas Tanis are so miraculous, so not only you're not allowed to fast on that day, but you're not allowed to eulogize as well. So in other words, any date that's mentioned in Megillas Tanis, it's Asur B'Tanis. That's why it's called Megillas Tanis. You're prohibited to fast. And some of them, you're also not allowed to eulogize as well. So somebody dies and the burial's on one of the dates of Megillas Tanis. So the rabbi gets up there, and you know what the rabbi does. You know the move. I'm not going to eulogize today because it's one of the dates of Megillas Tanis, but let me just... I'll just mention one thing. There's not a eulogy. Okay, fine. I think we've all been there. After most of the dates that are mentioned in Megillas Tanis are events that occurred during Bayit Sheni, during the Second Temple. Okay. The question that we're going to be dealing with is the following question. After the destruction of the Second Temple, Megillas Tanis, which is a record of dates, which are joyous days, are they still commemorated? Meaning, is the full legal force of these dates mentioned in Megillas Tanis still in force after the destruction of the Second Temple? Why are we having this discussion right now? It's really simple. Because as we just noted, the four dates that are mentioned in Zechariah, so those are dates that shift, they change. Meaning that during the period of the Bayit Sheni, those dates that are mentioned in Zechariah, so those dates are observed as a yontif. You remember yesterday's daf? Yesterday's daf we said that they're sason l'simcha, they're days of joy, during the Bayit Sheni. But after the destruction of the Bayit Sheni, those days convert from being days of joy to days of sadness because we don't have a Beis Hamikdash anymore. So too, the Megillas Tanis now, the discussion the Gemara is going to have is after the destruction of the Second Temple, do these dates now shift? Now, the Gemara is not suggesting that we have to now fast on every one of these days. I don't know how many dates are actually recorded in Megillas Tanis. I do know it's a good number. So do we have to actually, the Gemara is not going to entertain the idea that we actually have to fast on these days, but are the legal ramifications of the dates mentioned in Megillas Tanis still in force? Are we prohibited from fasting and eulogizing on all these dates that are mentioned in Megillas Tanis post-Churban? That's the Gemara's discussion that we're going to start right now, and it's going to take us really through a good part of today's daf. Itmar, the Gemara brings in a machlokas. Rav, Rabbi Chanina, Amri, Bala, Megillas Tanis. So first, let's take the positions down. Rav and Rabbi Chanina say that Megillas Tanis is nullified, meaning the document's still in existence, we still know the history, but after the destruction of the Second Temple, we no longer have these dates that are recorded, don't no longer have any legal ramification. You would be allowed to fast and to eulogize on these dates. Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Amar lo ba'al Megillas Tanis. And Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, so they say no, Megillas Tanis is not nizbatel. It's not nullified. All the dates are still in force. Rav, Rabbi Chanin, Amar ba'al Megillas Tanis, Achi kamar, Bizman she'e shalom yulo sasson simcha, Ein shalom som. So Rav and Rabbi Chanina say their position, look, our position is really simple. What happens to the four fast days of Zechariah? After the destruction, so what happens? Those days which were days of joy turn into days of sadness. Megillas Tanis, same basic phenomena. The days that are mentioned in Megillas Tanis are days of joy, no longer. Okay. Same. Now, as I mentioned a moment ago, I'm just going to reiterate, it's not exactly the same. The days of mention Zechariah, those actually turn into fast days. The dates mentioned Megillas Tanis are not fast days, but still they don't have the joy. Okay.
It was written 100 years before the destruction of the Second Temple.
Oh, it was written. Oh, I didn't mention who the author was. Okay, I'll come back to that. It's a good point. Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Amrei, Elo Bala Megillas Tanis. They're of the position that Megillas Tanis is not in his battle. Hani hu de talin rachman bebinyan beis hamikdash avahanach kedekayim kaimi. And Rav Yochanan Rav Shul Ben Levi's position is, look, the psukim in Zechariah about the four fast days, those four fast days are linked with the Beis HaMikdash. Right, you want to look back at the very top of the Amud? Tzom Revi'i, Tzom HaChamishi, Tzom HaShvi'i, Tzom HaAsiri, Yeh LeBeis Yehuda, L'San Son L'Simcha. Meaning, those days were absolutely linked with the Beis HaMikdash. So obviously those days change with the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. But Megillas Tanis, we're going to see some of the dates over the course of the rest of this morning. And you're going to see, most of them have nothing to do with the actual Beis HaMikdash. Okay, at least the ones that we're going to see today. They have nothing to do with the Beis HaMikdash. So they're not connected with the Beis HaMikdash. So those dates are still enforced even after the destruction of the Second Temple. Okay, pointed out. Who is the author of Megillas Tanis? Well, it's hard to say author because there were more dates that were added after he died, but Hananya, who lived about 100 years prior to the destruction of the Second Temple, so he's given credit for authoring Megillas Tanis. But as we'll see in just a moment, there were more dates that were added even after his death. So you know, it was a work in progress, if you will. Masiv Rav Kahana. Okay, and now we challenge. Okay, we're going to now basically discuss whether or not Megillas Tanis is batel or not, or Einam is batel. Maisa v'gazru tanis b'chanukah b'lod. So once there was a calamity that took place during Chanukah, and the rabbis instituted a fast during Chanukah. The Yavud Rav Elazar v'rachas Rav Yeshua v'siper, and the Tanaim living at the time, Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. So they were incensed. How can you possibly make a fast day, institute a fast day on Chanukah itself? Chanukah, 8 days that are mentioned in Megillas Tanis. You can't make. And they were so upset. Rabbi Lazar bathed himself. On a public fast day, bathing is prohibited. We'll talk about that in a couple of Masechtos from now. And he went and he bathed. And Rabbi Yeshua got a haircut. Meaning, basically, they did public actions that basically renounced the idea that there's a fast day instituted in Chanukah. And then they told the people, that was terrible. Meaning, for whatever reason, the rabbis felt that it was necessary to make a fast day during Chanukah, but that was wrong. And you should fast over you fasted. Right? If that makes sense. Meaning, as Rashi explains, you should do tshuva. There should not have been a fast day instituted during Chanukah. Now, we know that Rabbi Eliezer lived after the destruction of the Second Temple. So the and so obviously now where the significance of Megillas Tanis is being held up even after the destruction of the Second Temple. So Am Rav Yosef Shani Chanukah Dika Mitzvah. So Rav Yosef says, yeah, but we're talking about Chanukah. Meaning, and you're going to hear this a couple times over the course of this morning, that Chanukah, and we'll add Purim to that as well, although they're mentioned in Megillas Tanis, but we can put them in a separate category. Yes, they're in Megillas Tanis, but categorically they may be different, and basically you're hearing that right now in the Gemara. Chanukah is different. Why? Because it's a mitzvah. Meaning, not only is Chanukah a date mentioned in Megillas Tanis, but on top of that, we have a mitzvah. We light Chanukah licht on Chanukah. So, Amalei Abaye v'tibata l'yivitibata mitzvah sa. So Abaye says, okay, so what? So there's a mitzvah. This is a very strange suggestion coming up in the Gemara right now. So Abaye says, okay, why don't we do this? Why don't we do it with Chanukah, and why don't we do it away with the mitzvah? So, which is really, even just the suggestion is hard to understand. Meaning, if there's a mitzvah, the Gemara is suggesting the mitzvah should just end. Okay, anyway, so Elam Rav Yosef Shani Chanukah Demefarsim Nisa. So Rav Yosef says, no, you misunderstood me. Meaning Chanukah is different because there's Pirsim Hanes. Now, what exactly does that mean? So I'll read Rashi. Rashi writes, Kvar Hu Galu L'cho Yisrael Ayidei Shana Gubo HaMitzvos. Because there's a mitzvah connected with Chanukah, so everybody knows Chanukah. Meaning if you were to quiz people, do you know this date mentioned Megillas Tanis? So most of us would not know. Now, granted that we live thousands of years afterwards, but apparently even at the time, not everybody was fluent in all the dates mentioned Megillas Tanis. Chanukah, however, everybody knew. Why? Because there was a mitzvah connected with Chanukah. So everybody knew about Chanukah. And Rashi then continues to write, V'hichziku bo kishel Torah v'lo nachon lebatlo. Therefore, it has the same status of that which is mentioned in the Torah. Okay, not exactly sure what that means, but I get the basic gist of Rashi. Don't tamper with Chanukah. Even if we're going to argue that Megillas Tanis is nisbatel, it is nullified. And all the dates over there are historical record, but no legal significance. But not Chanukah. Chanukah has a different status, has its own unique category. Okay. We tried to prove that Megillas Tanis is not batel, but the Gemara says not a good proof because you're talking about Chanukah, and Chanukah may be in a category by itself. Most of Rav Acha bar Rav Huna. So Rav Acha bar Huna now notes, what about the following? Consider the following. Here's now, we're reading actually part of Megillas Tanis. Okay? Betalta betishrei betalta atkarata minshtayara. This is all Aramaic. On the third day of Tishrei, so they were mevatel the Haskaros mentioned in the Shtar. Okay, I did not even a decent job translating. I did a poor job translating. So now I'll put it into perfect English. Not perfect, but better English. The minhag was that on Shtaros, on regular documents, they used to write God's name. And it's not a good idea. Documents after they're used tend to get thrown out. And so it's just not a good idea. And possibly maybe violating Shem Shemayim Levatala by mentioning God's name on a regular document, on a business document. So just not a good idea. And for whatever reason, the Gemara doesn't give us any background, but the minhag was that people wrote God's name on documents. And finally, at one point historically, during the Second Temple, they did away with that minhag. And it was a joyous day. So you see, right, it's just a perfect example of this has nothing to do with the Beis Hamikdash. It just, in other words, it was a joyous moment where they did a way of mentioning God's name in documents. And Shigazra Malchus Yavan Gzer Shalol Askir Shen Shemaim Apim Ukishigavra Malchus Chashmanai Vinitzchum Itkinu Shiyum Askir Shen Shemaim Afilu Bishtaros Vekachi Ukosvim Bishnas Kach Vekach Liyochanan Kohen Gadol Kel Elyon. So, and it started, in other words, the Gemara tells us it started during the period of the Chashmonaim, when they would write the name of Hashem in documents. And the Chachamim said, look, it's just not going to be good. It's going to get thrown into the garbage. And so, finally, some period later, after the Chanukah incident, they got the people to stop writing God's name in a document. And so therefore, that day it was declared as a Yantav. Okay, good. So an example of a date mentioned in Megillas Tanis. Now let's think about this for a moment. which date was identified as the day they stopped writing God's name in documents? The third day of Tishrei. Okay. Right? Third day of Tishrei. Now, V'isa gadach abat l'migilas tanis kamaisa batol acharanaisa mosifin. So the Gemara says, now, let's consider. If you think that Megillas Tanis is nisbato, if you think that's nullified, so if the original one is nisbato, they're going to be adding, meaning what the Gemara now is suggesting is that this must have occurred at some point historically after the Chorban Beis HaMikdash. It cannot be during the actual Beis HaMikdash itself. Why? Why does the Gemara think that? Because remember, we're talking about the third day of Tishrei. What is the third day of Tishrei? The third day of Tishrei is what we call, Tanis Gedalia, right? The fast day of Gedalia. Okay, so, and remember, what did we learn earlier today and yesterday? That during the Second Temple, that wasn't observed as a fast day, it was observed as a Yontif. So, there's already a Yontif on the third day of Tishrei. So it must be that this incident that's recorded in Megillas Tanis can be during the Second Temple, because we already have a joy's day. It must have been afterwards. That's what the Gemara is suggesting right now. And this would be a proof that Megillas Tanis is not benullified. So the Gemara says, well, that's a lot of assumptions, and the Gemara says, let's challenge all those assumptions. Your assumption's wrong. In other words, this was actually during the Bais Sheni. So in other words, during Bais Sheni, although we already had the third day of Tishrei as a festive day because, again, all the Zechariah fast days are joyous days during the Second Temple, but this was added on top of that. The Gemara in a moment is going to ask, what are you adding? Meaning if it's already a day of joy, so why add another day on the same date? What does that gain for us? Okay, typically the Havale Yom Shenerag Bo Gedalia Ben Achikam. The Gemara is asking this question right now. We're on the top of Yutessam at Aleph. So this is the day that Gedalia Ben Achikam was killed. And remember, I know this sounds strange, but remember, during the Second Temple, this was a day of joy. It was Sason V'Simcha, as the Pasuk in Zechariah mentioned. So it's already a joy's day. So the Gemara says, Amarav L'Nitzuchah El Alasra Shalafanav. So the Gemara says, oh, you know what's added by the fact that the third day of Tishrei is mentioned in Megillas Tanis, added on top of Gedalia ben Achikam, what it adds to that is the day before. Okay, one thing I did not mention earlier, but let's mention it right now. All the dates that are mentioned in Megillas Tanis, you're not allowed to fast on that day, and you're not allowed to fast on the day before, nor on the day after as well. Okay, so it had a little bit of a ripple effect. The dates mentioned are prohibited in fasting and eulogies. Not all of them, but whichever ones are prohibited in fasting and eulogy, you're not allowed to fast on that day, the day before, and the day afterwards as well. So you know what we gained? We gained by mentioning the third day of Tishrei as a day of festivity because they stopped writing God's name on documents, is that not only is the third day of Tishrei going to be prohibited to fast, but the second day of Tishrei as well. So wait one second. There should be a lot of questions popping up in your head. Okay, just wait one moment. Let's just get through the Gemara. So El Alasar Shalafanav. Shalafanav Nami, typically, Dahavala Yom Shala Achar Rosh Chodesh. So the Gemara says, well, hold on. Second day of Tishrei is the day that follows Rosh Chodesh. If it's the day that follows Rosh Chodesh, shouldn't it already be prohibited to fast on the day that follows Rosh Chodesh? So the Gemara's response is, Rosh Chodesh da'araisa, o da'araisa lo bai chizuk. No, Rosh Chodesh is a da'araisa, and da'araisa does not need any extra support. Basically what the Gemara is saying is that the first day of Tishrei is a din da'araisa, so there does not need to be buttressed neither on the day before and the day after. So therefore it's perfectly acceptable to fast on a da'araisa day, not on the day itself, but on the day before and the day after. So what we gain by adding the third day of Tishrei and Megillas Tanis because of this event of the stoppage of writing God's name on documents is that the third day of Tishrei is, you're not allowed to fast on that day, which truth of the matter is already existed because it's the Gedalia ben Achikam day. But on top of that, also the second day as well, because it's the day before the third day. Okay. What is fascinating over here? A number of things that are fascinating. First of all, the Gemara is talking about Rosh Hashanah, and it refers to it as Rosh Chodesh. Okay, that's strange, that's unusual, but fine. But the other interesting thing over here, and the most obviously interesting thing over here, is that the second day of Tishrei, in terms from the Gemara's perspective, is nothing. Meaning, it's not Rosh Hashanah, and it's not... And it's Gedai ben Achikam was day three. So what's day two? Day two is nothing, meaning it's not Yontif. Now for us, that's very strange to imagine, because we know every second day of Tishrei for us is Rosh Hashanah. So it's obviously very interesting. It needs a lot of attention. I'm not going to give it its proper attention right now, but yes, it is very interesting. Here we are now.
Maybe it's the last day of Elul plus the first.
Gemara clearly here is describing the second day of Tishrei. Okay, so basically, let's just quickly summarize. We're in the middle of an argument of a discussion in the Gemara whether or not all the dates mentioned in Megillas Tanis are nullified or not nullified. After the destruction of the Second Temple, are they still in force, yes or no? It's a machlokus between the Amoraim. Rav and Rabbi Chanina say it is batel after the destruction of the Second Temple, and Rav Yochanan and Rav Shuman Levi says it's not batel. We have now brought down a couple of arguments that would support that it's not batel, but the Gemara says maybe not. You could still argue the point. And basically what's come down now in the Gemara is any date mentioned in Megillas Tanis, you're not allowed to fast on that date, and the day before and the day after as well. If it's a date mentioned in the Torah, like Rosh Hashanah, and we're going to add to that as well. And if it's a date mentioned in Nach, so there's a prohibition to fast on the day itself, but not the day before and not the day after. That's helpful because think about it. We have a custom amongst the Jewish people. And that is the day before Purim, we fast. Now, Purim is one of the dates mentioned in Megillas Tanis. So you think to yourself now, wow, that's strange. That's unusual.
But that's part and parcel of Purim.
Understood. But if there's a prohibition to fast on the day before dates mentioned in Megillas Tanis, so then...
But those are volunteer fasts that they're not allowing.
Okay, I understood that, but we wouldn't have generated that fast day with this idea in mind. Okay, so, but it's not... It could be an issue. Obviously, it's not, because we all fast the day before Purim, but a very simple solution in terms of why we do is because Purim is not just a rabbinic day, it's a day mentioned in Navi, meaning like all the dates mentioned in Sefer Zechariah. Those are Navi dates, and therefore they don't need Chizuk, and therefore you can fast the day before and the day after. We could say the same thing regarding Purim, the 14th day of Adar. It's mentioned in Megillas Esther, part of the Ksuvim, part of the Tanakh, and therefore you would be allowed to fast the day before and day after, which is good to know, because that's in fact what we do. Okay, Tanya. The Gemara quotes a brisa. We're on the top of Yutes Amarav. All the days that are mentioned in Megillas Tanis, you're not allowed to fast, not only on the date itself, but the day before and the day after. Shabbos was v'yom tovim, hey masrum lefneim l'acharim mutarim. Contrast that to Shabbos Yontif, you're not allowed to fast on Shabbos Yontif, but the day before you are, and the day after you are as well. Ma hefesh min zeh lazeh, halal l'divrei Torah, v'ein divrei Torah tzrichim chizuk, halal l'divrei mosofrim v'divrei sofrim tzrichim chizuk. Okay, one is Dvar Torah. Dvar Torah doesn't need to be buttressed, it doesn't need to be supported, but a rabbinic takana, that does need to be supported. The Gemara says, yeah, the third of Tishrei is also rabbinic, isn't it? Meaning, the idea that we fast on the third day of Tishrei, isn't that rabbinic, and doesn't that need to be supported? The Gemara says, no. So the Gemara makes the point that we just made, which is that any date mentioned in Tanakh is, it's not the Oraisa, but in this respect, Ki'ilu. It's like a Daraisa. It's Kedivrei Torah. Mesiv Rav Tuvi Bar Masna, we continue. We are now going to learn another date mentioned in Megillas Tanis. Best from Etamnia Bay on the 28th day of Adar. Okay, the Bryce doesn't mention that, and I'd be hard pressed to tell you. Rashi mentions. On the 28th day of Adar, so Asas Besurta Tavasal Yudai. Good news came to the Jewish people. The Lo Yidum Maraisa, where we can now go back to learning Torah. Shegazra Hamachus Gzera. I'm going to assume it's the Roman Empire. who stopped us from learning Torah. Shelo yaska b'tarfa, shelo yamulos b'neihem, not to learn Torah, not to circumcise their sons, v'shechilu shabbosos, and that we are to desecrate the Shabbos. Okay, shmad, decree. Okay, could be the Greeks. I don't. Whatever. It's an event that occurred at one point during the Second Temple. Ma'asa Yehuda ben Shemua, and now, even though I just said it's an event that occurred during the Second Temple, as we'll see in just a moment, I got to be wrong, because what did Yehuda ben Shemua institute? The Chaverav Halchavanat Lo'etsa Mimatronisa. So first of all, I'm sorry, we're going over the incident. So they went to a woman. All the Romans go to her. Okay, her occupation, the Gemara doesn't say it, but it sounds like she had a particular occupation. So, and this is what her advice was. In other words, she knew how the Romans thought. It is the Romans. It's got to be. It's after the destruction of the Second Temple. So, she knew how the Romans thought, and she gave us the following advice. Hafkana. Okay, anyone who's been any time in Israel, so you've heard that term, you know that term, protest, right? Go out into the street and protest. So the v'yevginu b'layla, hilchu v'yevginu b'layla, so they went down, they protested a night, amru ishamayim, and this is what the chant they said during the protest. Lo achicham anachnu, right, we're all brothers. V'lo b'nei avechan anachnu, we all come from the same father. V'lo b'nei imachas anachnu, we all come from the same mother. Ma nishtaneinu mikol ha'uma v'lashon sha'atem gozim alenu gzeros kashos. And you're prejudiced, right? You're segregating us from all the other nations. Why should that be? So ubitlum. Now again, there's got to be so much story behind the story over here. Why that was a successful protest? Why that argument was a successful argument? I'm sure there's a lot more behind the scenes in terms of why all of this worked. But for our purposes, however, we're just focusing on one issue, which is ubadlum. So then the decree stopped, and obviously it was a great day, because now we were able to go back and learn Torah and give bris milah and be shomer Shabbos. V'osayom, aso yom tov, and on that day they made a yantov. So the 28th of Adar now made it its way into Megillas Tanis. Okay, now this entire episode occurred during the period of Yehuda ben Shemua. Who is Yehuda ben Shemua? The Gemara makes that point very clear. I'm sorry, the Gemara doesn't make it very clear, but we're going to make it very clear. Yehuda ben Shemua lived well after the destruction of the Second Temple. Now, Rav and Rabbi Chanina, you're arguing that Megillas Tanis is batal. It's nullified after the destruction of the Second Temple. If it's nullified, how are you adding more dates to Megillas Tanis? That is a powerful question. Well, maybe you want to argue, well, maybe Yehuda ben Shemua lived during the Second Temple. It's not true. By Yehuda ben Shemua, Talmidei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir, Basar Hachiava. We know that Yehuda ben Shemua was a student of Rabbi Meir. And Rabbi Meir lived after the destruction of the Second Temple. You want to take a quick look at Rashi? Rashi over here goes through the Mesorah. Right? It's so good to do this. Just get down the Mesorah well. So, Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, we know, lived at the end of the Second Temple. Remember the Gemara's in Gittin? We go through it on Tisha B'Av. Gemara's in Gittin talk about how Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai saved the Jewish people post-destruction of the Second Temple. Okay, right, Nun Hei Nun Vav. Anyway, so Charv Bais V'Rav Elazar Talmid Ohio. Now we know that Rabbi Eliezer was a student of Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai. And Rabbi Akiva, Talmid Shel Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Akiva was a student of Rabbi Eliezer. Now Rabbi Akiva, in his younger years, did live during the Second Temple period. Okay, but we're already now two generations after Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, and we only are up to Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Meir, Talmid Shel Rabbi Akiva. Now, after Rabbi Akiva, we go to Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir was a student of Rabbi Akiva. Remember, after 24,000 students, Rabbi Akiva died. He then started all over again with five students. One of the five students was Rabbi Meir. And Rabbi Yehuda ben Shemua was a student of Rabbi Meir. So now we are five generations, five chains in the Mesorah, going from Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai to Rav Yehuda ben Shemua. So it is nearly impossible to argue. It's impossible to argue that Yehuda ben Shemua lived during the Second Temple period. The Gemara just simply establishes the fact that Rav Yehuda ben Shemua was a student of Rabbi Meir. The bottom of Yotzei Amud Aleph, the Gemara here quotes a Mishnah. Kli zechuchish nikvu, have a glass utensil. where there's a piercing, there's a hole in the glass temple. V'hitif l'tochan aver. And what do? You fill it up, you boil up lead, and you pour the lead into the hole, it fills up the hole. So Amr Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, Yehuda ben Shua Mo, Metame Mishum Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yehuda ben Shua Mo says it's Tame, and he said that in the name of his Rebbe, Rabbi Meir. Now, as a parenthetical note, we could spend a lot of time over here on this. What does the Gemara mean when it says it's Tame? Rashi over here himself offers two explanations. Tosfos on the bottom offers four explanations. But just to say it really nice and succinctly, that it's basically Rashi, I'm giving you Rashi's first explanation. That basically, once you fill the hole with lead, it now has the status of a metal utensil, even though the majority of it is actually made out of glass. And therefore, we know the halachas regarding metal utensils, that if it breaks and you repair it, it goes back to its original tumah. This is what's called tumah yeshana. And even though only a small amount of this utensil is made of metal, but since it basically is holding it together, so therefore it has the status of a metal utensil. And therefore, now it's tumah with tumah yeshana. I know I said that really quickly, but the Gemara over here is just establishing the fact that Rabbi Yehuda ben Shmuel was a student of Rabbi Meir. Top of the next Amud, the Chachamim disagree. And again, what we got from all this is that Rabbi Yehuda ben Shmuel was a student of Rabbi Meir. And so now the question is very strong. He is adding to the list of dates of Megillas Tanis. He's living after the destruction of the Second Temple. How can you possibly argue that Megillas Tanis is batal after the destruction of the Second Temple, and now we're adding to the dates? It's impossible to argue, and it certainly again supports the idea of Rav Yochanan and Rav Yeshua ben Levi that Megillas Tanis is not batal. The Gemara says, and we'll finish up today with this, the Gemara says Tanaihi. So the Gemara says, you know what, you're right. This Braisa certainly is supportive of Rav Yochanan and Rav Yeshua ben Levi, and the Gemara says it's a machlokus. Machlokus Tanaihi. The Tanaihi will enter the Braisa, Hayamim Ha'elak, Suvim Megillas Tanis, Beim Bezman Shebeis HaMikdash Kayam, Beim Bezman She'ein Beis HaMikdash Kayam, Asurim Divrei Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Meir says that the dates mentioned in Megillas Tanis are prohibited both during and after destruction of the Second Temple. Which by the way, works out. Why didn't we bring this price earlier? Right? If it's part of the process of Gemara. But, okay. Anyway, and Rabbi Yossi, Om Rabbi Zman Shebeis HaMikdash Kayam, Asurim Imnesha Simcha Hilam, Ein Beis HaMikdash Kayam, Mutar Imnesha Evil Hu Lahem. So it's a machlokus in the Braisa between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi. And so what it comes out now is Megillas Tanis Batla? The Gemara says it's a machlokus amongst the Amorayim. It's a machlokus on the Tanayim. Let's finish up today with halacha. V'hilchasa batla v'hilchasa lo batlu. And the Gemara concludes, what's the halacha? Megillas Tanis is nullified. And then the Gemara follows up with another statement. Megillas Tanis is not nullified. Okay. Usually, right, when you're learning halacha, what you want from your halacha is, I know there's a lot of debate, but let's get clarity. let's get to a bottom line. And the Gemara gives us a very strange bottom line. So the Gemara says lo kasha, but we are going to get to clarity, and we are going to get to a bottom line. So the Gemara says kam b'chanuka u'purim kam b'shar yomei. Chanukah and Purim are dates mentioned in Megillas Tanis. They're still in force. All the rules of Megillas Tanis are enforced, and not allowed to fast and eulogize on Chanukah and on Purim, even after destruction of the Second Temple. But the other dates that are mentioned in Megillas Tanis, and this morning we only went through three other dates, but the other dates that are mentioned in Megillas Tanis, they're all in this battle, they're all nullified, and they do not have the force of they don't have status after destruction of the Second Temple. So I kind of will stop over here.